This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us, and your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. I'll stop saying shall I, for the course of the next hour, and just a little more concentration, a little less action, maybe. If you've got a mystery that needs solving, if you've got a question to which you know there must be an answer, but you do not know what the answer is, then do get in touch by dialing 0345 6060973. If you're not familiar with this feature, give it 10 minutes and you will be. There's not really much point me explaining it because it sounds a bit daft and pointless, but in reality, as it transpires, as it unfolds, it's just a rather joyous hour that we get to spend together every week. So joyous, in fact, that it has spawned its own board game, like a genuine, bona fide, grown-up, and also popular with children, board game, which you can win if you are my favourite contributor. That's it. That's the only criteria. If you're my favourite contributor to Mystery Hour, or if you tug my heartstrings, although if you're doing it deliberately or cynically, then I will sniff you out like a ferret after a rabbit or something. Then you win one. I just said again. If you want to buy one, you can go to mysteryhour.co.uk or check online and check shops. John Lewis stock it. In fact, there's a big games fair on yesterday, and I delighted that Mystery Hour was featuring there, carefully looked after by the excellent people at Big Sky Games. But get over to mysteryhour.co.uk if you want to get a copy for yourself, or be a brilliant contributor and have an opportunity to win one. The full terms and conditions are at lbc.co.uk. 12:07 is the time. Should we go? We've got everything else. I think the key bit from that Zahawi stuff, by the way, was essentially the head of the HMRC saying careless doesn't mean innocent. Why doesn't he just go? Two questions, really, that we would have done if it wasn't Mystery Hour. Why doesn't Sunak just sack him? But that's too speculative. It must have something to do. I don't know. Anyway, that Mystery Hour now. No more tax. No more income tax. No VAT. No money back. No guarantee. Adam's in Cardiff. Question or answer, Adam?
Hello, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
Okay, so I want to know, why does burning paper create so much more ash compared to burning wood? I used to like burning wood. Well, I'm in sort of in construction. I'm a tradesman, and I bring home wood off jobs, and I burn it in the fire pit in an evening sometimes.
Yes,
I could burn wood for hours.
I like it. It's primal. It's primal, mate. It's staring into the flames.
Yeah, exactly.
It's seriously. It takes us back to prehistory, or even not that long ago when there was no telly. But there's a theory that when you're watching the telly without really watching it.
Yeah.
There's a theory that goes back to our sort of primal fondness for staring into the flames of a fire, because that meant you were safe. Not only had you got fuel to burn a fire, but you'd got shelter in which to light the fire. And because you were light, you probably had some food. So the fire conveys a sense of security. Staring vacantly at the television screen as it flickers like so many tiny flames apparently could be appealing to similar appetites, Adam. So you're very, this
explains a lot.
It does, doesn't it?
I do find myself doing that.
Yes, except me too. It's crazy. We did fire pits a lot during the lockdown as well. It was lovely. They do. They're just enthralling. They engage.
Yeah, they are. They really are. So I used to burn wood for, you could do it for hours in the evening.
Yes.
And only create a small amount of ash. And
yes.
Then my mother-in-law would come over with a bag of, a small carrier bag full of important documents and
yes.
Maybe old photos that she didn't want to throw away. She wanted them burned. And just putting that on the fire, like sort of tactically as well, I'm trying, to not smother it, but just the amount of ash it creates just ends up smothering the fire. And I'm thinking, why, when, paper's made of wood, why is it creating so much ash?
That's a really good question. I've noticed this as well. We did it after the GCSEs finished. We put a ton of revision on the fire pit, and it was crazy. It was unpleasant, actually, the amount of ash, because it gets caught up and floats into the air and everything. So why so much more ash with paper than with wood?
And I did have a theory that it might be surface area. It was just a theory, but I started making paper briquettes for my log burner.
Yes.
So I pulp shredded paper, compress it together into a block and let it dry out. And then if I put that in the log burner, it will burn, but almost leave just a slightly smaller version of itself in ash.
So the surface area doesn't work. Somewhere in there is the answer to the question.
You think?
Yeah. Could it actually be that there isn't more ash, but it's much lighter ash?
I don't think so, because I could burn logs for a few days on my log burner and then empty the tray at the bottom and you know, there'd be the same amount of ash every time.
Are you sure? If you burnt the paper and left the ash there and then added some water, it wouldn't be roughly the same amount?
Well, I've not done that experiment. Because
you're an amateur, man. You're there, you're making... Because I'm thinking about the type of ash with the paper. It's like flaky ash, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is slightly different.
Flaky ash.
You might be onto something there, James.
Could be.
I never thought of that.
No, we will find out. Because I don't know, in terms of chemistry or physics, I don't know. Well, we'll find out. Why is there such a marked difference between wood ash and paper ash? And is it that there's actually more... paper ash than there is wood ash? I love that question. You're a man after my own heart there, Adam. Your fascination with fire. David's in Chelmsford. David, question or answer?
I've got a question, please.
Carry on.
How do scientists rate animals' intelligence? I mean, they say the primate, the chimpanzee, is one of the most intelligent animals on the planet.
They do.
And dolphins.
We did Jonathan Gullis in the last hour, David.
And they've got a spider called Portia that can problem solve.
Well, there's your answer.
How do they rate that animal is more intelligent than the next one?
By giving them problems to solve.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I think tools as well. Crows, there's, you know, some birds use tools.
Yeah, that's right.
And
so
some
rate which one is more intelligent than the other?
But they give them problems to solve.
Is that it?
Is that
just because they give them problems to solve?
Yes.
How do they? They couldn't work out about Porsche spider.
What do you mean? I don't know if we can bring individual. I sound like a politician. I can't comment on individual cases. So you're suggesting that Porsche is cleverer than other spiders of the same species?
Yes.
What can she do, Porsche? I'm not familiar with this story.
Porsche is a spider that hunts other spiders that can actually problem solve and work out trigonometry for where to go to catch the other spider.
Well, that's just through observation.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to claim a win on this, but I think...
No,
in answer to the question, is there like an IQ test for all animals? No, is the short answer. Well, I say that with such confidence, don't I? I'm probably going to end up eating humble pie later in the day. I say, actually, James, I am I'm the professor of biological intelligence at London Zoo, and there is, in fact, a test. But they can't because they're all different anyway. You can't give a spider the same test as a crow. Are you writing this down, Keith? This is genius. I'll find out. How do they determine an animal's intelligence? And just to be clear, Porsche is a type of spider, not just one spider.
Yeah, it's a type of spider. It's a type of jumping spider.
Right.
I found this out on one of the David Attenborough programmes, which I absolutely adore.
Yeah, me too. All right, you're on. How do they, or you, or we, or anyone, determine an animal's intelligence? 0345 60 60 973. I think we got close. Gary's been in touch there. Crow nicked my paintbrush once. Thank you, Gary. Dan's in Auchinbury in Cambridgeshire. Dan, question or answer?
It's Ben, not Dan.
Yeah, well, that's a relief. Well, I say that's a relief because I thought my eyes had gone, but they've written Dan, so it was their mistake, not my eyesight, which is a relief. Ben's in Auchinbury. Let's start again. Ben's in Auchinbury in Cambridgeshire. Ben, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
Is there less oxygen in the wintertime when there's no leaves on the trees and no plants growing?
In the air, in the atmosphere.
In the air, yeah, oxygen levels. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's local to the UK or how's it work.
Yeah, measurable. So you mean because all the photosynthesis isn't occurring, more carbon dioxide and less oxygen. So
yes, possibly.
So we're looking for a measurable difference in air content as a consequence of the seasons.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I like that question.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. I apologise for getting your name wrong.
No problems.
Cheers, Ben. Take it easy. 12:15 is the time. Why does paper appear to create much more ash when burnt than wood? 03456060973. How do they, we, you, test the intelligence of animals? And does the constitution of air change according to the seasons? Because there's much less photosynthesis when there aren't any leaves around. It's 12:15.
Some things leave you guessing. Like, why are yawns contagious? But not MailChimp. MailChimp eliminates guesswork from email marketing by analysing data from billions of emails to offer up personalised recommendations for how to improve your email content and targeting. Guess less and sell more with Intuit MailChimp.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:17 is the time, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just some breaking news for you. The tallies almost perfectly with what I suggested to you about 10 to 11 this morning, actually, when I said I can't think that there is anyone who thinks it is correct for a trans woman convicted of rapes committed when she was a man being put in a women's prison, except, of course, for the rather obvious fact that that was the plan, at least, of the judicial system in Scotland. But so you don't need to talk about trans, you don't need to talk about men, women, you don't need to tell me your strongly held views about the very practice or reality of transitioning and misgendering. All you need to do is answer the question of whether or not a rapist in possession of a penis should be put in a women's prison, to which I couldn't conceive of anybody answering yes, definitely. And I can tell you that Nicola Sturgeon has made it clear that the rapist, the trans rapist in this case, will not end up in a women's prison. That's all I know at this point, but that has been clarified by Nicola Sturgeon in First Minister's questions in the last 10 minutes or so. 12:19 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Reg is in Barrow-in-Furness. Reg, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Where do moles go in the summer? You only get molehills in the winter.
Are you sure? Is it? I mean, could it be that...
I walk a lot, and there's loads and loads of molehills around at the moment, and there is every time this time of year, every year. But you don't see them in the summer. Even when it was frozen, you could tell they were fresh. Some of them were frozen, and you could see the fresh ones, and you'd stand on them, and they were soft while the ground was hard around you. But you don't see them in the summer.
I find out. I mean, they don't hibernate, moles. I know that.
But you don't hibernate in the summer, do you?
No, you wouldn't.
You hibernate in the winter.
Exactly that. So it'd be something to do with worms, maybe?
I don't know.
Would the worms be nearer to the surface during winter, during the colder months?
I haven't got a clue. They don't have been.
No, nor have I, Reg. I haven't got a clue either, mate. I thought we might just chew the fat a bit together in the hope of stumbling across an answer.
It's strange. It's strange because they don't migrate or anything like that, do they? They don't hibernate. But there's absolutely loads and loads around at the moment, but.
No, you're on. I haven't seen it. I haven't been in the countryside for a while. You're on. I shall. I'll do my best to find out for you. Where do moles go in summer? I mean, the short answer, probably, Reg, is deeper.
Yeah, I did think that one, but
because I mean, theoretically, it's hard to imagine anything else.
Yeah,
they just.
But you think higher up in the winter it'd be colder.
No, not necessarily.
You think you go deeper in the winter?
Not necessarily. I think it'd be colder at the top in the summer.
Yeah, I don't know.
We will find out. Okay, 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Ash, animals, oxygen and moles so far. Phil's in Southampton. Phil, question or answer?
Hi there, it's a question please, James.
Carry on.
This is when you're eating fruit, what classifies something as being a pip or a seed?
I don't want to get into difficulty here, but is a pip not just a tiny seed?
I don't have a clue. The only thing I'm wondering is, you know, sometimes you'll see like a picture of a crusty roll appear on social media and say, what do you call this?
Yeah.
Is it just a sort of different areas?
A bun or a bun or a roll or a...
Is there a difference?
I don't think there is.
Where does the name pip come from then?
Well, what's got pips in it, do you think?
Sometimes it's people call things pips or seeds, but you think I'd call that a pip, maybe.
Yeah, well, give me an example. When would you say pip? Orange pip.
Maybe I'd say
oranges have pips in them.
I'd say I pick the pips off the strawberry.
You don't pick the pips off a strawberry.
No, I don't.
No,
but you get people
beer all day. We say pips in orange.
My children often do it sometimes when they're really bored.
A pip in an orange. Oh, you should get them a PlayStation. A pip in an orange. You have. We talk about orange pips, don't we? Lemon pips and orange pips.
Well, I would call them seeds in an orange.
Oh, flipping heck, man! You're just being difficult now.
Is it dependent on where you live as to what you call something?
Can't just keep asking more questions. It's complicated enough already with the original one. What's the difference between a pip and a seed? Is the question.
That is the question.
Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows. Right, I shall find out for you. Or I shall try. So what is there? Is there a difference, in fact, between a pip and a seed? Because I can't go on with the next question about then why do we do it? Because we're turning it into, like you say, one of those internet jamborees where there's no right answer to the question. Thank you, Phil. Pips and seeds. Hannah's in Bagshot. Hannah, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
When you talk about political parties, you will say the Labour Party said this, the Green Party did that, but you say the Tories for the Conservative Party. And where does that come from? And why haven't any of the other parties got nicknames?
You're only allowed one question.
All right, I'll take the first question then. Where does that come from?
I know the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
Why do you sound disappointed?
I like the idea of someone else calling up and telling me.
But I'm the main man here. I'm the presenter. Right. It's my picture on the flipping board game box, Hannah.
Okay, go on. You tell me.
I'm not going to now. It's an honour for me to answer the question, not a flipping pain.
Far away.
And it's a great answer as well. It comes from the Irish.
Mm.
Word for outlaw.
Oh.
So the Tory means outlaw.
It
comes from the English settlers in Ireland, essentially being correctly described as thieving outlaws by the Irish people in the Irish language. And then it got picked up in Scotland as well. And then I think James II, I could be wrong, but anyway, that's where the word Tory comes from, and it eventually got applied to Conservatives. I think Whig was a nickname, wasn't it, for Liberals, so there were nicknames as well for other parties. You could say Lefty is a nickname if you wanted to, or Reds, but Tories is definitely from the thingamy, from the Irish.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you see?
That'll do nicely.
Yeah, you're happy now, aren't you? Because it's such a good answer. You might not have got that if we'd left it on the board. You could have still been hanging out. Thank you. Round of applause for me. Thank you, Hannah. Dan's in Nottingham. Dan, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
I've got the answer to the paper question.
Yeah.
So paper and wood are both combustible because they're primarily made of carbon, as we know, but... The difference with paper is that it's exactly what the caller said. It's got a greater surface area. So if you think about how thin paper is, it's got carbon molecules all around the top, the bottom, the sides. It can be attacked and combusted by fire everywhere all at once. Whereas wood has all those carbon molecules stuck within the inside of the plank of it. So it has to be attacked from the top and bottom, which is why it seems as though more ash is created instantly. But if you were to run them all separately, they should create the same number of ash, provided that you've got the same weight as them.
Qualifications?
I'm a first year chemistry student.
See, I've got a contributor who has their degree already. From UMIST.
That's fair. There may be,
but I think they might be lying to me. It's a fellow who runs a dry cleaners in Altrincham. Is that there's no such thing as paper science, is there?
There isn't, no, but it is organic chemistry.
He told me he's got a degree in paper science. I think he's yanking my chain.
It does sound like a bit of a... It may be a PhD, maybe.
I think you can do paper science. So, anyway, their theory is that there is more material in paper. It's not just wood. It's got other stuff in it, like clay. And that would burn... You need to have a much higher temperature to burn all that stuff off, whereas with wood, you burn everything.
That's true. So the different components which make up paper are all different because they're all treated differently. So it would depend. This is with a massive caveat that the combustion of it would depend on the individual composition of that paper.
But generally, if we burnt a kilo of wood and a kilo of paper and then left it and added a cup of water, we'd have roughly the same amount.
Should do.
Yeah, I think so too.
That answers the question why, when the caller actually compressed it into briquettes,
yes,
it seemingly produced less because there was less surface area.
Yeah, I think that. So I got this right, actually. I got just from thinking about it, because I was thinking about the ash from the paper, and I called it flaky ash, which is a reflection of the surface area issue, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm definitely giving you the round of applause. Don't worry. Well, you've chosen the right course, haven't you, Dan?
Absolutely. I've gone back as a mature student.
I was just desperately trying not to patronise you by saying something like, you sound very knowledgeable for a first-year student, but now I've learned that you've already graduated from the University of Life, you see. It all makes sense.
That's right. I do try. I can consider it my second degree, if you like.
Love it. Round of applause for Dan.
Thanks.
Great stuff. 28 after 12. Mark's in Crawley. Mark, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Mark.
Why do we put candles on a birthday cake, or the origins of candles on a birthday cake?
Must have had that before. Must. I've got no idea. It's on the board, but I can't believe we've never done that before.
I don't remember it. If you have, that's what I'm asking.
No, I mean, well, if I can't remember it, it's certainly no guarantee we haven't done it. I love it. How many is it for you?
43 today.
43 today. Oh, see, if Keith was on the ball, he'd have been playing Nick Abbott's little birthday tune now. But it's not. It's not happening. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you doing anything special? It's not a very exciting birthday. 43. I was 51 last week. That's a bit grim as well. Were you doing anything nice?
Oh, just out for an Indian tonight and a few drinks at the weekend.
Do you know we went out for a Chinese on my birthday? It's a small world.
It is.
On the board. Why do we put candles on birthday cakes? It's just coming out to 12:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Candles on birthday cakes, pips and seeds, moulds in summer, oxygen in winter. Oh, yes, that's clever. Animals and intelligence, and we've done the ash question. Well done to Dan. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
CFI UK is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Hi, I'm Pep Guardiola, brand ambassador for CFI, a global online trading provider enabling easy and convenient access to the financial market. If you are into online trading, visit cfi.trade to find out more. Since 1998, CFI, empower yourself.
67% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. You should decide if you can take the high risk of losing your money.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:32 is the time you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Story that has passed me by this morning, but it's a couple of you have sent it to me. I'll just give it a quick mention. Michael Gove managed to defend Suella Braverman's exchange with the Holocaust survivor that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago while attending a Holocaust memorial event. So that notion of this particular... It's contagion, isn't it? It's a problem with party politics, is that unless you are prepared to condemn a colleague for doing something disgusting, you have little choice but to defend them, although Gove played the cowardly card of claiming he hadn't seen the full exchange, which probably makes him the only person in the country who didn't. 12:32 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. We've done the ash. How do they test animals' intelligence? Is there less oxygen in the air when there are fewer leaves on the trees? Where do moles go in the summer? What's the difference between a pip and a seed? And what is the origin of putting candles on birthday cakes? Keith's in Edinburgh. Keith, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Carry on, Keith.
How do they make babies cry for films and on film sets?
They pinch them.
They what?
They pinch them.
They pinch them? Is that not child abuse? Surely no. They don't pinch them.
Gently.
Surely not. Is that an actual fact? Do you know me?
No, I'm making it up. Crikey, don't phone Childline. I think wouldn't you just wait? I mean, a child is going to cry. Babies cry all the flipping time. Have you had a baby, Keith? Are you a father?
No, I'm far too young for that.
Oh, hang on, how old are you?
I'm 25.
35?
25.
25? Is that the record? Oh my gosh, you're the youngest Keith we've ever found.
What do you mean, like?
You obviously don't listen a lot because we've been spending years trying to find the youngest Keith in the country. I've got a colleague called Keith, right?
Right, okay, yeah.
And Keith is 30-something, late 30s, looks older. And it's a name that you very rarely encounter in kindergartens, for example. You don't find many Keiths in classrooms. And the youngest, I can't remember. I mean, when I say we've got a running feature, sometimes I remember it, sometimes I don't. So I've got no idea what the previous youngest Keith was. People are texting saying, "How old is this Keith?" before I even realised that I had a young sounding. I had a young sounding Keith on. So can we all remember 25? That is the current record. Keith is the youngest Keith in the country at the moment. So, I mean, I don't think it's very... A baby is going to cry. You wouldn't have to hang around for that long. Or they could play it over the top, couldn't they?
That's true.
You wouldn't need the sound. You'd only need the sound unless you actually had to have footage of a baby's crying face, in which case you just wait until it cried and stick a camera in its face.
Me and my friend Pietro thought it was worth asking because imagine that was a job that you had to make a baby cry for a living. Like, that's pretty rough.
Well, it is pretty rough. I will leave it on the board, Keith, and see if we get a professional filmmaker to tell us about how they get the babies to cry. 25-year-old Keith, eh? Crikey! Imagine if he'd rung in last year; he'd have been 24. Cormac is in Lambeth. Cormac, question or answer?
James, good morning.
Hello.
A question, please.
Carry on.
Nothing about Ukraine today.
I was going to say, this is a change of pace for you, Cormac, but, you know, come one, come all.
There's something I've been trying to figure out for a year and a half. I have a wee Labradoodle, which I inherited from my mum when she sadly passed away a year and a half ago.
I'm sorry.
And I got her for mum when dad died some years ago. But anyway, when I feed her, we feed her with dry pellets, the same as mum did.
Yeah.
And when she decides to eat her food, she takes 3 pellets in her mouth, goes into another room, normally in front of me, drops them on the carpet, looks at them, eats them very slowly one by one, and then goes back and wolfs down the rest of her food. And I've been trying to figure out for a year and a half why she does this.
My dog does that as well.
So she's not the only one.
No, mine's a Cavapoo, so there's a poodle in both of them.
Yeah, they're very similar.
I wonder whether that is part of it, or do all dogs do this? I don't know. So, yeah, and it does. She does it with wet food as well, although we have to try and discourage her because, obviously, you don't want wet food on the carpet. But
Mum never gave her wet food, so I've kept Mum's routine up.
Quite right, too. But so why does the dog take the first bite, as it were, the first mouthful somewhere else?
Basically, she takes about 3 pellets
in
her mouth very gently, comes in to the living room, drops them on the floor, sniffs them, eats them one by one, very deliberately and slowly.
Yeah.
And then she wanders back very deliberately and slowly and she wolfs the rest of
the food. I'm leaving the speed out of it because I don't know that mine does it deliberately and slow. So I'm focusing on the first sort of course. She has her first course. it's like a progressive dinner party. She has her first course in the sitting room and then she comes back to the kitchen to finish up for her main course and her pudding. I've got a cockapoo in High Wycombe that does exactly the same. Matt's already been in touch. I'll find out for you, Cormac. There'll be some sort of evolutionary explanation. I don't know if there will, but you'd hope so. It can't just be us. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Rob's in Taunton. Rob, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hello, Rob.
Nice to speak to you. Lovely to speak to you, actually.
Likewise.
It's a question. It's a question. Your research just sort of quizzed me on it, actually.
Good. It's can't let anyone through, you know.
Yes, well, no, quite. Well, you say that, sometimes you do.
Go on.
It's around... Okay, so my background, my father's Italian, used to have restaurants growing up. I can't understand why we have the need or why people sort of created so many different types of pasta. So you've got the rigatoni, you've got shells, Sicily, spaghetti, you've got flat ones. Mm. I mean, obviously different ones of the different dishes like lasagna.
Yeah.
But why are there...
So is pasta being served with a sauce? Why have we got so many different types of pasta?
Yeah, exactly.
Why just answered the question.
But a shell to a fusilli, surely is the same taste.
No, same taste, yeah, but...
Different surface area?
Correct. Holds the sauce differently.
Hmm.
What do you mean,
No. I'm thinking as I'm
cogitating.
I
thought you were being a bit dismissive. I thought that was a skeptical.
No.
It was a contemplative. Not a skeptical.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm thinking, if I chuck a shell into a pasta sauce and I put a rigatoni into a pasta sauce, would I taste any difference?
You'd get more sauce in your mouth with one than you did with the other.
It depends on the amount of sauce I put in, surely.
No, if you've got a pan full of sauce and you're dropping in one shell and one rigatoni, and then you take them out with chopsticks.
Yeah, okay.
In order to remove spoon-based sauce provision.
Okay, but then you have rigatoni, which are bigger tubes, and then you have the small. I forget which ones the smaller ones are.
There will be a culinary explanation for all of this.
There will be.
And it will be about the relationship between sauce and pasta.
Sauce, pasta.
Now, you and I, you sound like you have quite a primitive palate, Rob, no offence. But you might not notice this, but a pasta aficionado will.
I'd take offence to that.
Good. You were meant to. Bolognese, which actually is let's say for a carbonara, you would want to have spaghetti because every single strand of spaghetti is going to have the glutinous sauce on it. Whereas with an arrabbiata, perhaps, which is a waterier sauce, you'd go for a penne.
But then you can buy carbonara with different pastas.
You can do what you want, mate. I mean, there's no rules.
Of course you can. Sorry, again, I'm talking aloud.
Is your dad still with us? Sorry, that's a slightly indelicate
question. He is, he's in his late 70s.
Well, what does he say?
I haven't asked him.
What do you mean you've never asked your Italian restaurateur father, but you're asking me?
Isn't that against the rules, though? I could Google it.
That's not Googling. I was just literally sitting at a table with your father, the restaurateur, the Italian restaurateur, the trattoria entrepreneur, the trattoria legend, your dad, having a bowl of pasta and saying, Dad, why do we have so many different types of pasta? He'd love you to ask him that. It'd be a bonding moment. He'd say, Roberto, he'd say, you never took any interest in the business. Why are you asking me now?
You know my father. He's not that intelligent.
We shall find out, but I think that's I know that that's actually the correct answer, but I'll wait.
I still fail to believe a shell has more.
Well, that's a slightly different question.
Because
a shell, you've got a pool of sauce. You've got a pool of sauce in a vessel, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with a fusilli, you might have the same amount of sauce. Well, okay, I've got it for you. I've done it. I've got it right. Imagine two slices of toast. Okay, they are both toast.
Yeah, you know, thickness, is that thick?
Don't run ahead of me, Rob.
Yeah.
Okay, one slice of toast I am spreading with butter using a knife.
Yeah.
On the other slice of toast, I am using a teaspoon to put exactly the same amount of butter in the middle of the slice of toast. So you now have two identical foodstuffs in front of you in terms of the composition, the chemical composition, the size, the weight, the amount of butter, the amount of bread, the level of toastiness. They are absolutely identical. But Rob, they are also very different, are they not?
Yes. Yes, okay. I will give you sauciness.
Thank you very much.
I will bow to your
sauciness.
About your 10 years plus on me.
Some of us, Rob, are born saucy.
Well,
some achieve sauciness, and some have sauciness thrust upon them.
I forget where that quote comes from. That actual quote comes from.
That's it, though. I mean, we might get a better answer, but I'm taking a round of applause for that one.
Yeah, you do. Thank you.
Thank
James.
You, Rob. Thank
All
you.
Right,
and regards
care.
To your father. Regards to your dad. 12:43 is the time. Dan's in Manchester. Dan, question or answer?
Hello, James. Hello. It's a question, please. So, I want to know why it's considered lucky to be pooed on by a bird.
Well, I don't know.
Neither do I.
But I think I do.
Go on.
And it is, rather than drawing upon my encyclopedic knowledge of Italian cuisine, I'm going to draw here on common sense and also personal experience.
Okay.
Because my sister once got pooed on by a pigeon in Trafalgar Square, and it was one of the most joyous moments of my childhood. I remember it. We never came to London, but whenever we did, it was always magical and memorable. But few moments of magic were more profound than when my sister, with whom I was in a state of constant warfare as a child, when my sister got pooed on by a pigeon, at which point, while she was highly distressed, at which point my mother tried to explain that this was actually very, very good luck, while I sniggered skeptically in the background. So I presume it was a way of comforting someone who'd just been pooed on.
I mean, you know, that does make sense.
It does, doesn't it? I'm not going to take the round of applause because there might be another explanation, but in the great annals of human interactions, if someone you care for has just been pooed on by a pigeon, you want to comfort them. There's not a lot you can do except say, oh, that's actually good luck, that is.
I see, because this makes sense in the regional way as well.
How do you
because
mean?
Because my girlfriend's Italian.
Right.
And she says, no, we don't consider that good luck, because I've asked her.
Oh, yeah.
But when it's stepping in dog poo.
They say like, that's no, good luck, do they?
Yeah.
Blimey.
So if there's more mess on the floor.
If there's something again, bad has happened to you, you say that it's good luck to comfort yourself,
exactly.
Never mind other people.
Maybe.
Bit of superstition.
I mean, you could have got it right. Did a bird poo on you this morning? Is that why you've got it right?
No. Oh, I see what you mean. No, but I did notice some bird poo on my rucksack the other day, which meant I did get pooed on at some point in the not-too-distant past.
Well, there we go. We're both lucky.
And I think I know where it was, actually, because there's a little depository at the tube station where the birds obviously congregate above. So now I walk around it instead of bravely walking through it. I walk around it on my way. Anyway, if someone's just tuned in now, they won't be staying tuned for long, will they? I'm not taking a round of applause for that, Dan. I'm leaving it on the board. All right.
I'll give you one.
Well, that's very kind of you, mate. That's because I'm so saucy. 12:45 is the time. Questions that still need answers. How do they test the intelligence of animals? Is there more oxygen in the air when there are fewer leaves on the trees? Where do moles go in summer? What's the difference between a pip and a seed? When did we start putting candles on birthday cakes? How do they get babies to cry in films? Why do dogs do that thing with the food where they take the first mouthful somewhere else and eat it before coming back and finishing the bowl? And why do we say it's good luck for a bird to poo on your head? I need some answers. No more questions. We need answers. Answers, answers, answers. Answers, 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 answers. I think I answered the pasta type question, but there is room for embellishment if you are an obviously Italian chef. Okay, 0345 606 0973.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
10 to 1 is the time. I'm going to read you this quickly. It's from Robert. It takes us back to the conversation we had in the last hour about the human catastrophe that is Jonathan Gullis, MP for a constituency in Stoke. This is so on the money, Robert. I'm embarrassed I didn't think of this myself. James, I was a teacher for over 20 years, and there may well have been people who had views like Jonathan Gullis's, although I believe I worked with any. What I find depressing is that no teacher would ever voice such views in a school staff room, as they know they would be universally condemned, and yet he felt comfortable voicing such views in Parliament. If Rishi Sunak has anything about him at all, he would lose the whip. Isn't that incredible? Wouldn't say it in a classroom, wouldn't say it in a staff room, but can say it with impunity and his full chest in the actual House of Commons. That's such a perfect illustration, Robert, of what I was driving at by talking about a national decline rather than just an individual example, an individual incident. Good grief. Marcello, there's a clue about what he's going to do. Marcello is in Haringey. Marcello, question or answer?
Hi, James. Here's an answer about the pasta question.
Carry on.
Okay, first of all, I would like to say that I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you very much. Grazie mille.
And as 100% Italian.
Yes.
And I go A-level in catering, and I come from a restaurateur family.
Fantastic.
I can confirm that. I had to stop driving as soon as I heard that question.
Brilliant.
Because it boiled my blood. And the pasta thing is that it's a regional thing. I can confirm that. Italy is formed by 20 regions, and each region has got provinces. Each province has got their own traditions, their own recipes,
yes,
and way of cooking food. So, the pasta shapes comes is a traditional and a regional thing.
So they do, certain shapes do lend themselves better to certain sauces as well.
Also, yeah. Of course.
But there are regional distinctions from different parts. That's fascinating.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Because I'm from Tuscany.
Yes.
I'm from Tuscany, and we got like at least two or three different types of pasta that you only find in Tuscany.
Good grief! Like what? Can you remember?
One is called, it's very famous, it's called Picci, P-I-C-I.
Wow. Yes.
Which is a handmade spaghetti. So it's very long and thick.
Right.
And it's fresh pasta without eggs.
Okay.
And we use that with any kind of ragu.
That's such a beautiful answer. I love that.
It is.
I love it. do you have a restaurant at the moment, or are you doing something else these days?
No, I changed career.
Okay, I was going to give you a free advert, but you don't. I mean, there's no point. You don't need it.
No, it doesn't matter.
A round of applause for Marcello.
Thank you.
Well, I love that, of course. And now I'm going to do a little bit of research on that. I love pasta. I love Italian food, and I'm going to do a little bit of research so that I can be even more boring when I'm cooking dinner for my children. Thank you, Marcello. Pete's in Brentwood. Pete, question or answer?
I've got an answer, James.
Carry on, mate.
Babies crying on movie sets and TV sets.
Yes.
So they have people called baby wranglers.
I know they do. I forgot this. Carry on.
So it's their job, along with the parents, to look after the baby, but then also get the performance from the baby that the director needs.
Yeah.
So there's a few ways they get the kids to cry, and which they can just sort of rattle through and see what works. So the first one is just taking the baby away from the mother.
Yeah.
That can set them off, especially if the mother seems a bit sort of distressed by it happening.
Yeah.
Sometimes the wrangler's just pretending to cry in front of the baby can set them off as well.
No pinching, then. Well, you wouldn't tell me if there was, would you?
Well, I'm sure it goes on, but yeah, I wouldn't say it's a good idea. But sometimes if they're really desperate, a loud noise, not too loud, but a shocking noise.
Yeah.
Can set the baby
a boo,
off,
like a boo. You could just go boo, like
yeah,
that,
exactly,
or something
yeah.
like that. I like it. Or wave something under their nose.
Yeah, and if in doubt, then they'll just not film the baby's face and add a sound effect on.
I knew it. Qualifications?
I made a kids' TV show called Mini Movies, about how movies are made, and that came up in our research.
You've been on before.
I have indeed.
And you got another round of applause.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. What are you working on at the moment? You don't have to tell me. Just being curious.
We are making another kids show, but that's all I can say at the moment.
Love it.
Right.
Thank you. Great
stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete. Grant's in Bracknell. Grant, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, mate.
It's the answer to the moles in the summer and winter.
I am a mole and I live in a hole. Where do they go in the summer?
So in the summer, they just go deeper down because the earth is drier and the worms and slugs, which they obviously feed on, are deeper in the ground.
Drier, not colder or hotter, but drier.
Yeah, then come autumn time, winter and late sort of spring is often very wet then. The slugs and the moles go to the surface and that's where
They're chasing the food.
Exactly
the slugs and the worms.
Exactly that, yeah.
Qualifications?
Own and mum my own pest control company and got 20 years experience.
Nice one. Now, do you do much moles? Many moles?
Not as busy as rats and mice at the moment.
No.
They are very busy in the wintertime.
And people want you to go, because they've got nice lawns, they want you to get rid of the...
Yeah, often just for aesthetic reasons.
Of course.
Lawns and obviously golf courses, they cause damage when people are trying to play golf.
Yeah. Did you see the Donald Trump story about golf?
No.
This is funny. So he has a tournament at his own resort and he announced that he'd won it. But he didn't play in the first round. So people would say, how could you have won this? It's only happened like at the weekend. How could you have won this tournament if you didn't play in the first round? And he said, well, I played around 2 days ago and it was really good. So I took that as my score for the first round and then he won his own golf tournament. That's a menace. Round of applause for Grant, please.
Thank you.
Very much. What?
Of course you can, mate.
Sorry. Yes, you can. Thank you for politely asking rather than shoehorning it in. Carry on.
Thank you, James. It's Woodrush Pest Control based in Bracknell.
There you go. Woodrush Pest Control in Bracknell for all your pest controlling needs. Patrick's in Belfast. Patrick, question or answer?
It's an answer.
It's
an answer to the question on ranking kind of animals' intelligence or figuring out what that is. So you were right in saying that, there are mazes and tests for certain animals, like the crows would be the best example of
that.
But there's also Oh, yeah, yeah. Some of them are fascinating to watch, but there's also other kind of tests which they can implement. One of my favorites would be they have like a grid with multiple images on it, of which there would be duplications, and then that they would show the animal, and then that grid would then go black, and the animal has to identify where the matches were based on their memory. And they use this quite a lot on pigs and chimpanzees and apes and the likes. Oh. But it's kind of assessing the number of associations they can make and the speed to which they can memorize the grid effectively. And for some of these tests, the animals greatly outperform humans. So
I love it.
You know,
I love it. Great qualifications.
Degree in psychology and master's in social research methodology.
So you've watched some of these experiments. You've conducted them.
Well, not.
Or you're just aware of them. You've got the round of applause. Sorry, don't worry. Why am I even asking? Honestly, look at the time. Sheila's in the room. Why am I picking over the bones of you? You've got round of applause. Great work, Patrick. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you.
Squeeze in one more, I think. Sarah is in Aldenham. Sarah, quick as you can. Answer, please.
So I have a Cavapoo-shan, 6 years old, called Marley, who does exactly the same. Brings his food to where a little mat, the mat where we eat, we have our kitchen table. And when I haven't got qualifications other than asking a very, very good vet.
That's a qualification.
I think so. And he said that it's a social thing. Because we eat at the table, he brings his food to eat with us.
Even if you're not eating?
Even if we're not eating.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Grand of applause.
Yes.
Lovely stuff.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Lovely to talk to you. Take care.
I'm going to give the mystery out board game to Hannah, who asked the question about Tories, because she was so disappointed that it was me who answered it. I feel that she obviously wanted a slightly more engagement and involvement. I feel that that's the least I could do. So that Hannah wins this week's board game. James says, Sarah, in Renfrewshire, I just wanted to text you to say you've without a doubt brightened my day and made me laugh out loud. I'm having a time of it at the minute and my mental health is struggling, though now forevermore the thought of saucy pasta will always bring a smile to my face. Thank you for bringing happiness to my day. Sarah, thank you for bringing happiness to mine, and I'll leave you with another smile. I forgot who sent this, but the reason why it's considered lucky to have a bird poo on you, you're lucky it wasn't a cow. That's it from me for today. If you've missed any of today's show, you can listen to it all again on Global Player, where you'll also find every show on the station, as well as the world's biggest podcast, including the self-contained Mystery Hour podcast, which contains the entire Mystery Hour archive. So download Global Player for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. Tom Sawbrick with you at 4. Now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I've saved up the Bill Nighy one for myself.
Oh,
I haven't heard that yet.
My only Oscar nominee,
Fantastic.
Well,
or maybe Oscar winner soon. You never know. Thanks, James.
That could be what tips the judges it over could the edge, be. That full disclosure.
Did you hear that full disclosure?
We've got to give it to him. We've got to give it to Nighy.
I can hear Tom Hanks now. Yeah. God, that was good.
Hey.
God, that was good.
Well, get me on it, he'll say.
Yeah, well, hopefully, eh?